Support for NPR comes from ADP. Say you're in HR and a solar flare adds an extra hour to each day. How would this impact business? ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to help your business take on the next anything. ADP, always designing for people.
A warning, this episode contains discussion of sex. French leader Napoleon Bonaparte has been a legendary figure for more than 200 years. He was a military leader and an emperor, and ruthlessly ambitious at both.
Now his story is told in a lavish war epic directed by Ridley Scott and starring Joaquin Phoenix as Napoleon. I'm Aisha Harris.
And I'm Stephen Thompson. Today we are talking about Napoleon on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining us today is writer and critic Walter Chow. Welcome back, Walter.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you. So Napoleon begins in 1793 as French citizens gather to witness the beheading of Queen Marie Antoinette. The French Revolution is well underway, and Napoleon Bonaparte is watching in the crowd. Napoleon is played by Joaquin Phoenix. From there, we see Napoleon's rise to power as he presides over many epic military battles, stages a coup to seize control over the French government, becomes France's emperor, presides over many more epic military battles, gets exiled, returns, and gets exiled again. Along the way, he courts and marries the love of his life, Josephine, with whom he corresponds in letters read throughout the film. Josephine is played by Vanessa Kirby. Their relationship is troubled throughout as they struggle to conceive an heir, and they carry on a number of affairs, some of which become public. But the big story of Napoleon is one of hubris, in war and in empire building, and of one man's pursuit of conquest at all costs. Napoleon was directed by Ridley Scott, who also worked with Joaquin Phoenix on Gladiator. The film is in theaters tomorrow. Walter, I'm going to start with you. What did you think of Napoleon?
I was really mixed. This is a movie I really, really wanted to like. I really enjoyed The Last Duel that Ridley Scott did a couple of years ago, and I thought maybe this was going to be kind of along the same sexual politics journey of it, the weird perspectives that men and women share and don't share. And I thought that was really clever in The Last Duel. And I wondered if it wouldn't be Napoleon and Josephine, the weird marriage story, crowded around with some of Ridley Scott's trademark giant epic battles that you mentioned. But yeah, I ended up being very mixed on it. I think it doesn't do enough of one and maybe too much of the other.
So you wanted more of the Napoleon and Josephine?
I wanted it to be weirder.
Yes.
Even if there weren't any battles at all, which are so amazing to the point of mesmerizing. But what was really interesting to me, though, was just how weird those two guys are together, Josephine and Napoleon. There's something really twisted and beautifully perverse about that relationship. And I wanted more of that. That's something that I haven't seen. I've seen the big battles. What I maybe haven't seen is a real exploration of just how messed up Josephine and Napoleon were. Didn't think there was enough of it, even though the cast appeared to be game to go a little darker. They didn't quite get there for me.
Make Napoleon weird.
Yes.
Well, we should note that the version we saw and the version that you'll be able to see in theaters, that version is 2 hours and 38 minutes long, but there is a Ridley Scott director's cut that is 4.5 hours long. And apparently that is a little more centered on Josephine. A lot of what was taken out apparently is Josephine's backstory. I'm trying to imagine how they managed to film 2 more hours of salvageable material, but you might get your wish if you've got 4.5 hours to spare.
Well, I take it all back.
Oh, God, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. How about you, Aisha?
So about 5 minutes before the lights dimmed and this movie came on, I realized, oh, man, I have not thought about Napoleon since high school. So this is going to be fun. It's like I'm going to have to like try and remember who various figures are. And granted, the movie does help you a little bit with captions underneath to tell you who is who. But I was just like, oh, man, outside of talking about Napoleon complexes, why would I have thought about Napoleon since then? So I went into this as someone who doesn't really care for period dramas and also is not really a war person. But I came out of it realizing, first of all, this movie is way more lighthearted than I anticipated, which is weird to say about an epic where some thousands of characters die in bloody battle. But Napoleon is, I mean, he may not be weird enough for Walter. And I don't know if the movie as a whole was weird enough for me, but Napoleon is kind of weird. I mean, Joaquin is playing him as this smug dude who's also kind of awkward and very unself-aware. He has some very petulant lines here and there. At one point, he tells a commander, "You think you're so great because you have boats." And it's like...
Yeah. I deserve this pork chop.
Yeah, it's like, it delves into that weirdness. But, and I'm sure we'll get into this a little bit more, but like, I did have an issue with the actual Napoleon and Josephine relationship in a different way from Walter, in that like, this is the season of like trying to understand difficult famous men through their relationships to their wives. And I have thoughts about that, which we can talk about later. But like, it kind of bothered me in a way. And I wanted, I don't know if the 4.5 hour version would solve those problems, but it was a problem for me in this iteration of it.
Yeah, I don't think it would solve it, just because I don't think Ridley Scott is the person to solve that.
Yeah.
You know, I think when he's at his best after his early first four masterpiece movies, the movies I like the best after that period are maybe Thelma and Louise The Last Duel, right? And those are both co-written by women. I don't want to make too much of that, except that it does offer Sir Ridley a little bit of balance, a little bit of nuance that he otherwise doesn't have. And I think Ridley Scott is a little bit, or a lot, heavy-handed. And he's such a good heavy hand, right? He's so good when he's doing the military stuff. Whenever there's any kind of nuance, whenever he tries to deal with things that have a question, he doesn't like that, I think. And so There's a possibility for a really, really great movie by Yorgos Lanthimos.
I definitely kept thinking about The Favorite and during those scenes between them. Yep. Yeah, yeah.
And I think he's kind of striving for that, right? He wants his giant, period, accurate boats and huge, you know, the giant, big, huge. These little delicacies of human interaction become cartoonish. The way that, you know, Napoleon, Joaquin Phoenix is whimpering when he wants, you know, as foreplay, and she soothes him. Like, there's something very weird about it. And I wanted more. I wanted to say, please tell me what you're getting at. Are you saying that it was because of his Napoleon complex? Was it because he needed to prove himself as a man that he killed 3 million people? Is that what you're saying? Because I want this message, but it's not quite there because the war is so beautiful. So it's not really an anti-war film either. So what is it exactly? And who's it for?
I think you just hit on exactly what my issue with this movie is, which is I don't think it coheres into anything. I don't think it really has that much to say about Napoleon.
Yeah.
To me, I found it an interesting companion piece to The Last Duel. I think it shares some conceptual DNA with The Last Duel. I think both films are very interested in looking at past eras and how bad some of the sex was. There are definitely some shadows and echoes of that film in this one, but ultimately, I didn't feel like the Napoleon and Josephine relationship coheres into anything particularly interesting. Even in 2 hours and 38 minutes, we get tons of their letters being read back and forth. But a lot of that feels like telling instead of showing. I don't necessarily feel like that came through on the screen. I agree with Walter that some of these battle sequences are absolutely spectacular. There is a battle set piece set on a frozen lake that has images in it that I will always remember.
Yeah.
And that is very high praise. This is a technically beautifully made film, but I'm not sure it adds up to that much. And Aisha mentioned the little cards that pop up. You know, this is the Earl of Thistlewick and this is the whatever. And I'm like, I'm glad that you're telling me who this is. But there's a lot of, I want somebody at some point to lean into making a biopic that just shows title cards that are like Wikipedia headers. And so it'll just be like personal life. And then we just see Napoleon and Josephine together, because just like lean into being a filmed Wikipedia entry. That stuff didn't engage me at all. But mostly I just came away from it not having a real sense of what it was trying to say.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think historians will probably disagree. But the question isn't whether this movie gets Napoleon right historically accurately or anything like that. Like, for me, it's like whether this offers a compelling enough version of Napoleon to support its reason for existing. And so, like, what is the narrative arc here? He starts off kind of like a man of few words, and then, like, as he has these successive victories, he gets bolder and more puffed up. And when he meets Josephine, he also, like, seems to, like, be filled with a new sort of vigor. And going back to this relationship between them, what is that relationship trying to achieve? It clearly dives into how some people have said that some of Napoleon's military decisions were made directly because of her, or, like, out of his relationship with her. Okay, sure, let's blame the women or whatever. Again, when we have these, like, women, wives, mistresses, whatever, of these famous men who, you know, when you have that kind of character, it flattens them into purely romantic objects. Or in the case of Napoleon, it's like romantic obsession first and foremost. You know, I went and looked at her Wikipedia page afterwards and I was like, oh, she liked to collect art. She did all these other things. And I'm like, I got none of that from this. It's just like, she shows up, she says a little thing about how her husband was executed. She has a kid. And then that kid disappears. I don't know right. What happened to that kid.
What happened to her kids? Yeah.
And then the rest of the story becomes her trying to bear him a child and not being able to. And, like, for all that Vanessa Kirby is trying to do here, it just, like, never rises above that sort of very specific trope of the woman in the male-centered war movie. Walter, like, what would make it weirder for you? Or, like, more interesting, that relationship?
Oh, man. I think we talked about, like, what the NPR censors would allow through. I don't think I could tell you.
Well, just more kink, I guess.
You remember the way that she courts him? It's fascinatingly weird. Mm. They're just sitting, like, next to each other, and she just sort of pulls up her bloomers and says, once you see it, you'll never forget it.
And boy, does that bear out.
and the very next scene. Exactly. And the very next scene, they're getting married, and then he's going off and killing, you know, he's conquering Egypt. And it's like, Put it all together for me. Don't just kind of leave these tantalizing crumbs. I don't like to be lectured to, but I also don't like it when there's just, like, these beginnings of ideas that are never really brought to a mature fruition. If we had a hot 90 minutes of just Napoleon and Josephine, right? And at the very end of their very strange dysfunctional relationship, you get the same end title that tells you how many people Napoleon killed. So at the end of it, you're like, this weirdo, this guy? There's also the sense that it's almost a comedy, right? It's the best hat movie in decades.
That hat does a lot of work in
that
this
hat
film.
Does work.
It's another character.
It's the best supporting actor in this movie. You know, it gets in the way when he's trying to kiss people. He takes it off and tries to put it on others. It doesn't quite fit right. It kind of hits you over the head.
As it were.
It's kind of his, like, rosebud, right?
You know what's interesting to me is it feels like you saw the movie Elvis, and what you wanted was the movie Priscilla.
Yes.
You know how, like, Priscilla doesn't have any Elvis music in it? And you basically want the movie Josephine.
I do. I confess it.
Apparently, there have been a lot of books written about Josephine. So, I mean, it could happen. Or maybe it hasn't. Again, this isn't my genre, but.
Well, I guess I did want to ask about that. To kind of wrap up this discussion, I wanted to ask about, there have been projects built around Napoleon. They have largely been boondoggles. Stanley Kubrick famously tried to get one off the ground and couldn't. What is it about Napoleon's story that is so hard to turn into a satisfying movie?
I mean, I would say, again, as someone who hasn't thought about Napoleon in a very long time, I think it's a similar problem that's plagued most biopics are most biographical, historical movies, anything that's adapting, especially if you're going this far back into history, is that, like, we have to base this on historical accounts that may or may not be true. Mm-hmm. And you have to try and piece within all of these accounts of who Napoleon was, what he did, and all these historians and historical figures trying to assign meaning to what he did, mm-hmm. when perhaps there wasn't, maybe it was just chaos. Like, mm-hmm. who knows what was going up in that brain, really? You have to try and also create an actual narrative arc out of this. And you have to decide, do you like this guy or do you not like this guy? Or how do you find a middle ground? And I think it's really easy to fall on either the hero versus villain version, and it's way harder to get the middle ground, like the gray areas. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is part of an issue that I have with most biopics. I don't think it's just unique to Napoleon. I think maybe also just the idea that, like, this is a war movie, a war epic. And when you see how much money was put into this on the screen, you can imagine that, like, a lot of the attempts have failed in part because, like, that stuff's expensive.
Walter's idea would have saved Apple TV Plus about $195 million.
Just an intimate bedroom drama would have cost, like, you know, maybe a couple million. They could have done that.
Yeah, you know, I would only echo everything that Aisha said. I think, you know, and I would add the idea that Napoleon's kind of icky. Mm-hmm. Is that true, or is that just a result of British propaganda? I mean, the whole idea of the Napoleon complex was kind of invented by a British caricaturist that just started drawing Napoleon as very short, just a mock because they were on opposite sides of this battle. So what really is true? We don't really actually know. And I think there's a certain lack of clarity of purpose.
Yeah.
Because at the end of it, the people that are Neil deGrasse Tysoning this movie are going to Neil deGrasse Tyson it.
Of course.
The people who are going to it for a romance aren't going to find a romance in a traditional sense, not the kind of romance you would probably want to have anyway. It's none of my business.
I don't know your life.
I don't know your life. I'm not judging anybody. But I'm just saying that there's not really a point of view. There's not really a I don't know who this is for, because it's going to make everybody a little bit upset.
I agree completely. All right. Well, we want to know what you think about Napoleon. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH. Up next, what is making us happy this week?
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. It's easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself too thin. Therapy can provide the tools and self-awareness to help you learn how to recharge, define your boundaries, and build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp Online Therapy. Fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month.
The Indicator from Planet Money is all in on video games. Not just because they're a fun hobby. Video games are one of the fastest growing businesses worldwide, worth more than the film and music industries combined.
We're seeing some games that are really taking, $500 million to make.
We're taking a week-long look at the video game industry. Listen to the Indicator from Planet Money podcast on NPR.
Across America, history is often recorded on small markers. You've probably seen them on the sides of roads, in front of buildings, in the middle of nowhere. NPR's Laura Sullivan spent a year investigating thousands of markers and found a distorted version of America's history, but also curiosities, humor, and joy. Listen to the new episode of The Sunday Story on the Up First podcast from NPR.
There are a lot of issues on voters' minds right now. Six big ones could help decide the election. Guns, reproductive rights, immigration, the economy, healthcare, and the wars overseas. On the Consider This podcast from NPR, we will unpack the debates on these issues and what's at stake. You can listen to NPR's Consider This wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Stephen Thompson. Before we get back to the show, a quick word. We know it's important to you to have us here every week, helping you figure out what to watch, read, or listen to. Your financial support makes us happy every week. It's what makes it possible for NPR to cover news and pop culture and give you shows like this one. Even though what you listen to from NPR is free, it's not free to produce, which is why we want to say a big thank you to our Pop Culture Happy Hour Plus supporters and anyone listening who currently donates to public media. If that's not you, Giving Tuesday is almost here, and an International Day of Giving is the perfect reason to sign up for Pop Culture Happy Hour Plus. You'll be supporting the show, and you'll hear each episode without messages from sponsors. Or you can make a tax-deductible donation to your local NPR station. You have choices. What really matters is that you are a part of the community of listeners who keep NPR going. We cannot do it without you. You can give today at donate.npr.org/happy or explore NPR Plus at plus.npr.org. Thank you. Now it's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? Aisha Harris, What's making you happy this week, buddy?
Well, this is a song that is almost a decade old, and I'm just now discovering it, but it makes me really happy. And it's by electronic duo Capital Cities, and the song is called Farrah Fawcett Hair. It's actually kind of timely because this song features Andre 3000, and as we all know, Andre 3000 is...
has just dropped.
Just dropped a new album of instrumental music, but here he is singing on it, but it's a weird song that's just a list of random good stuff, like with a killer saxophone break and also Andre 3000, as I said. So let's play a little bit of this song. I love that. Or how infants with baby breath yawn in your face. Good stuff. They use a different word, but I can't use it on NPR, obviously. It's kind of like If We Didn't Start the Fire was thematically coherent and actually a good song. This is a good song. You can dance to it. You can like rock out to the saxophone break. It's just great. So if you haven't heard it, or if you have, put it on again. It'll make your day. It'll make you just smile because it's just a list of good stuff to a really fun beat. So that's a Capital Cities' Farrah Fawcett Hair featuring Andre 3000.
Wonderful. Thank you, Aisha Harris. Walter Chow, what's making you happy this week?
I mean, Aisha just made me happy by taking a random shot at Billy Joel. But, you know, what's really making me happy, and I think maybe I'm a little bit late to the boat on this, but I really love Blue Eye Samurai on Netflix. I just started watching it. It's an anime series done by a married couple named Michael Green and Amber Nozumi. It's beautiful. It takes on these ideas about mixed race, about immigration. It's set in the Edo period in Japan, where they close their borders to outsiders, and all the voice actors are racially correct. You know, all the little things that I've grown more and more passionate about in the last several years. This series honors it. It's on Netflix now. Ken Branagh plays maybe the most evil character I have encountered in any medium for several years. He's so good as a voice actor. But Blue Eye Samurai, and I didn't expect to love it as much as I do. It's playing now.
Wonderful. Thank you, Walter Chow. What is making me happy this week? First of all, delighted to see various strikes ending so that yes. production can pick up and we can get all sorts of new and nice things again. And one of the side effects of the strikes that I think was actually beneficial is what is making me happy this week. And that is that last week, CBS started airing as a companion to rerun episodes of the delightful sitcom Ghosts. They started airing reruns of the delightful UK sitcom Ghosts, on which the US version is based. And if you don't know Ghosts, it's a very, very charming show in which a couple comes into possession of a big, spooky, haunted mansion. She has a near-death experience, and suddenly she can commune with the ghosts who occupy and haunt the property. Part of what is so delightful about these two shows is that while they share a basically identical premise, they are completely different characters. Each one has its own kind of well-rounded set of foibles and powers and goofiness. And I love the idea of networks and streaming services dipping into the waters of TV produced in other countries and seeing CBS, forced though their hand was, I'm delighted to see that they are shining a light on the UK version of Ghosts, which is not necessarily easy to find if you don't have access to various online means, and introducing that delightful show to US audiences. I'm delighted to see it. Ghosts UK just started dropping in the US last week, and it's rolling out side by side with reruns of the US version, which is also terrific, and they are what is making me happy this week. If you want links for what we recommended, plus some more recommendations, sign up for our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. That brings us to the end of our show. Walter Chow, Aisha Harris, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Such a pleasure.
This episode was produced by Ramel Wood and Liz Metzger and edited by Mike Katziff. Our supervising producer is Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Stephen Thompson, and we will see you all tomorrow.
If you've never donated to the NPR network before, that's okay. Public radio is available to everyone for free. But we do rely on listener support from those who are able to give. So join the community of supporters for Public Media Giving Days, coming up on May 1st and 2nd. Please give at donate.npr.org, and thank you.
In this country, more than two local newspapers are closing down each week. As news deserts grow, public radio is a lifeline for staying informed. Keep that service strong with a donation to the NPR network at donate.npr.org. And thank you.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.